Hi there, Jonathan here. The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website where you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. That's at www.jonathanfaust.com. Thank you and enjoy. Good evening. I have heard in some of the groups, and I would imagine this has been kind of a hard day. First day can be pretty hard. So I wanted to start off with a little story. A woman in a supermarket is following a grandfather and his badly behaved 3-year-old grandson. It's obvious to her that his hands are full with this child who's screaming for sweets and candy and you name it. Meanwhile, grandfather's working his way around, saying in a controlled voice, "Easy, William. Won't be long. Easy, boy." Another outburst, and she hears the grandfather calmly say, "It's okay, William. Just a few more minutes, and we'll be out of here. Hang in there, boy." At the checkout, this little screaming kid is throwing items out of the cart, and again, the grandfather is saying again, William, just relax, buddy. Don't get upset. We'll be home in 5 minutes, William." She was so impressed. So she goes outside to where the grandfather is loading his groceries and the boy into the car. And she says to this elderly man, "It's none of my business, but you were amazing in there. I don't know how you did it. The whole time you kept your composure, and no matter how loud and disruptive you got, you calmly kept saying that things would be okay. William is very lucky to have you as his grandfather." "Thanks," said the grandfather, "but I'm William. This little jerk is Kevin." So how many times today did you say, "20 more minutes, you can do it, you're going to make it"? Meanwhile, the mind is doing what the mind does. As I was reflecting on this talk, sort of initiating our experience for this retreat, I was reflecting on what might be helpful. And I thought it might be helpful to share the 4 things that I like to remember when I'm on a retreat. And you might think of them as questions that you're going to ask yourself. One is to ask yourself, "What am I feeling right now?" Another is, "How fully present can I be here right now?" A third question is, "What am I noticing right now?" And the 4th inquiry you can ask yourself is, "Can I be with this right now?" So I'd like to talk a little bit about the importance of the body, talk about how helpful it is to gather your attention in one place, what it means to notice what's happening, and to explore the different strategies you can employ for being with whatever presents itself over the course of your retreat. So it's about being in the body, being fully present, cultivating non-judging awareness, and cultivating a quality of spacious, allowing presence. So first, a little bit about the body, about asking this question again and again, "What am I feeling right now?" A number of years ago, I was working with a couple, working on some communication issues they were having in their relationship. And he was trying to describe the situation from his perspective. I asked him, "Would you just tell me a little bit about this, you know, the struggles and what you're going through?" And he wasn't very articulate, but he was trying really hard to try to describe what it was like for him, what he imagined it was like for her, and his thoughts about this whole situation. And I was quite touched that even though it was a little not very clear, they could really sense the sincerity of what he was trying to communicate. And so I paused, And I turned to his partner and I said, "So having heard all of this, what do you feel?" And she said, "I feel he's an idiot." I said, "Not exactly feeling words." I like that story because we live in the mind. Sometimes what we call feelings are just opinions. And this practice is so much about somewhat of a simple process of moving from the cognitive, moving from your story or your narrative, to actually turn your attention to the experience of what's happening right now in the body. So a little reflection, if you will. If you like, you can close your eyes. You might just take a moment to turn your attention and just visit the what are called the sense doors. When you turn your attention to the sense door of sound, can you make contact with the sound vibrations? When you open your awareness to the sense door of touch, you might just notice externally the texture of the air, the texture of your clothes against your skin, the pressure points between your body and the chair or cushion. And internally sensing all that you perceive here of warmth, coolness, tingling, vibration. You might turn your attention to open the sense door of smell simply by reflecting on smell. What do you notice? What is here? The sense door of taste. The sense door of sight, what you perceive of perhaps the light beyond your closed eyes. And for a few moments, imagine the sense doors wide open. And sensing the brain processing this raw data as it's happening in real time. If you'd like, you can deepen the breath. And you can let the eyes open. Or if you like, you can remain with your eyes closed. And you might just reflect on all the play of senses. We are a thinking-oriented culture. And when you turn your attention to this realm of feeling, you may begin to realize that you are feeling all the time. We tend to tune out sensations, but the practice is all about tuning them in. And you might think of this realm of sensation as just the pure raw data of information. Neither good nor bad, just the play of energy happening inside and outside of you. And you might also begin to sense what's called in this practice Vedana, which is the feeling tone of this raw data, of how all the raw data of your experience will, before you know it, get categorized. There will be all the sensations which you will categorize as pleasant, the raw data of sensations that you'll categorize as unpleasant, and those that will fall in between, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, just the neutral sensations. It's happening all the time. This raw data of experience, the categorization of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and then all the thoughts that arise from that. All the thoughts of dislike, all the thoughts of liking, the experience of boredom with neutral sensation. all of this becomes available when you begin to slow down and you begin to pay attention. And you begin to see how connected your thoughts can be to sensations. Earlier, as I was meditating, I heard a sheep outside. And a thought popped up. Ah, the sound of sheep reminds me of growing up on a farm. What a wonderful memory that was. Just a kind of a pleasant feeling. And then another thought came. I can't believe I ate so much meat without having any thoughts about the little lambs I was taking care of. Then another thought was into agribusiness and how small farms are being eliminated, and that's just unjust. And suddenly I was off on another tangent. Meanwhile, it was one little baa over there. So we get to see what arises out of this raw data of sensation. How immediately you react. If it's unpleasant, usually you want to nuke it and make it go away. If it's pleasant, we'll find some unconscious way of crafting a way to keep it or grow it or make it bigger. And if it's neutral, we tend to get bored. It's been said that we are a mind-body matrix. What exists in the mind exists in the body. A phrase a lot of mind-body therapists or massage therapists use is that your issues are in your tissues. That what you think and what you feel, you experience in the mind, but it also coexists in the body. And when you begin to tune into the body and really listen to the body, there's a wealth of information that you can begin to tap into. There's a wonderful reading called A Felt Sense Prayer. I can't find the author, but it was supposedly a Chinese doctor. And I'd like to read just a few phrases as he talks about the intelligence of this, of what we call the felt sense, of how your body holds your experience. If you can imagine, this is the voice of the felt sense. I am the pain in your head, the knot in your stomach, the unspoken grief in your smile. I am where you hurt, the fear that persists, your sadness of dreams unfulfilled. I am your symptoms, the causes of your concern, the signs of your imbalance, your condition of dis-ease. You usually want me to go away immediately, to disappear or slink back into obscurity. You're mostly irritated or frightened and many times shocked by my arrival. But I implore you, I am a messenger with good news, as disturbing as I can be at times. I am wanting to guide you back to those tender places in yourself, the place where you can hold yourself with compassion and honesty. If you look beyond my appearance, you may find that I am a voice from your soul, calling to you from deep places within that seek your conscious alignment. When you listen to me, I may ask you to alter your diet, to get more sleep, to exercise regularly, to breathe more consciously. I might encourage you to see a vaster reality and worry less about the day-to-day fluctuations of life. I may ask you to explore the bonds and wounds of your relationships. I may remind you to be more generous and expansive, or attend to protecting your heart from insult. I might have you laugh more, spend more time in nature, eat when you are hungry and less when pain or bored, to spend time every day, if just for a few minutes, being still. When you begin to slow down, and when you can turn your attention from the thinking, judging, comparing, planning, reviewing mind, and enter into this realm of the aliveness of the body itself, you're coming home. You are reactivating this felt sense. And it's very easy to say, and of course, not so easy to do. Having the senses as your primary anchor is a very powerful thing to remember. Doing this can not only help you become more alive and aware and awake of what's between you and feeling free or feeling happy, but it's also a tool for liberation, a tool for truly being free. So as you remember, what am I feeling right now? You can turn your attention inside, make contact with the aliveness of what's right here, right now. The second question you might explore at any time is, can I be more fully present right now? And what does that mean, to be more fully present? I've been reflecting on analogies for this practice of transformation. I'm moderately obsessed with photography, so I have an analogy from photography for you. It's a rather esoteric illustration, but I think it makes sense. In the early days of photography, in the 1980s, there was a guy named Edward Muybridge. He's one of the earliest people working with photographic plates. And there was a very popular debate at that time. And the debate was, when a horse is trotting, are all 4 feet off the ground at any time? Now, you see, the human eye couldn't see close enough to determine if that was true. So in all the paintings previous to that, whenever you'd see a painting of a horse, there'd always be 1 foot on the ground. But the question was, well, is that true? Is there a time when all 4 hooves are actually off the ground? So he decided to try and figure this out. And even though he had very primitive cameras at that time, he found a way to capture almost simultaneous frames of a horse running. And maybe you've seen these images. Just the image from the side of a horse moving through space. And he determined that there are indeed moments when all 4 hooves are off the ground. Now, there is some dharma in here. He was able to dramatically slow things down so we could see more clearly. If you go to a movie theater, you'll see a motion picture. Here in the United States, a film is 24 individual frames per second. So if you break down 1 second of film, you get 24 individual images, and you put them together, it looks like movement. In that same way, in your practice, you have an opportunity to slow things down and to really pay attention, to be intimately and intimately more and more present to what is arising. As you practice, you become more aware of what we could call the flow or the stream, just this cascade of phenomena that are passing through, the flow of never-ending changing sensations, the narrative in your mind, the emotional quality of your reaction to the moment, the different states of consciousness. They're all part of this sense of the flow or the stream. When you can slow down, you can slow down your experience of that. When the conditions are right, you can get more and more present, more absorbed into the experience. And this is where your anchor becomes very, very powerful. Whether it be the breath, or whether it be sound, or whether it be this felt sense of the body. At any given time, you can ask yourself, can I be more fully present to what's happening right here? Alan Watts said this beautiful statement. He said, normally we do not so much look at things as overlook them. So there may be a time where at the end of the meditation, I just think, oh, there's the bell. What I'm overlooking is the experience of the bell, the arising of sound, the sustaining of sound, the falling away of sound, That is available when I can slow down and relax and pay attention. So as you're cultivating this capacity to be more fully present, we have to remember that we start again. When you're lost in thought, you bring yourself back and you start again. And as Tara said this morning, you don't have to yank yourself back. You can actually re-enter your experience. You can relax and soften and just come back into the intimacy of what's present. So I thought it might be interesting to just to do a little visitation of these anchors. If you like, you can close your eyes. And you might just turn your attention to the breath. And just notice where you feel the breath the most predominant right now. And you might just inquire, how much more intimately could you experience the breath? Yoga speaks of the three parts of the breath. The first in the belly. And as you soften your belly, how intimately can you isolate the movement of the breath right here? As you sense the diaphragm, can you just sense how the diaphragm is when you inhale? It might just very gently sort of lift and open out to the sides a little bit. Can you sense the movement of the breath at the upper lobes of the lungs? The upper lobes of the lungs actually extend up under the collarbones. Is it possible to feel the breath moving through the sinus cavities in your head? Can you experience the breath at the very rim of the nostrils? And if you'd like to fine-tune the subtlety, can you sense the movement of the breath outside your body? The little patch of skin beneath each nostril. How intimately can you be present for this next breath? And you might now, if you like, turn your attention to sound, with sound as a primary anchor. Notice all the sounds around you. There is a quality of listening which is mental, where your mind will automatically identify the source of the sound, its location, and then determine whether it's a threat or not. Another way of exploring listening is what is called in some traditions as bare attention, which is the actual experience of the sound. And can you, for the next few moments, just experience the vibration of the sounds, the raw data of sound. And you might explore yet another anchor, perhaps the palms of the hands. And let your awareness now shift into the palms and fingers and thumbs. Could you possibly relax or open the palms, fingers, and thumbs? Can you imagine or feel the space between your fingers? And is it possible to perceive any sense of aliveness here, any tingling or pulse or vibration or subtle energy or warmth? Just noticing. And you might just take a moment to reflect on these two elemental questions of mindfulness. What is your experience right now? What shifted in these last few minutes of turning your attention inward? And can you be with this right now? And you might, in your own time, let your breath gently deepen. And feel free to remain with the eyes closed, or if you like, you can open your eyes. This question, can I be more fully present, is an invitation to relax. And as active as the mind normally is, it's important to remember that in this practice, there's no condemnation of thinking. Thinking happens. The brain secretes thoughts like organs secrete fluids. And so you start again. You re-anchor, you resettle, you relax, and you receive the moment just as it is. I find it helpful when I am trying to cultivate this sense of more presence. To first remember that it's helpful to get comfortable with failure because the mind does what it does. And to recognize that when you focus on being fully present, you automatically will notice all the ways you're not present. And it's helpful to remember that there's no such thing as a good meditation or a bad meditation. The classic example is if you're rowing a boat across a lake. And in one direction, the wind is coming at you kind of two-thirds, and it's really wavy. And as you're rowing the boat, you're constantly having to recorrect, and there's water splashing into the boat. But you're really having to work and focus to make your way across skillfully. And then the wind changes. And as you come back, the wind is directly at your back, and it's almost effortless as you row your way back over the lake. And the question becomes, which of those was better? It's very easy to argue that rowing session across the lake at two-thirds wind, where you're having to concentrate and develop skill, you could say was the better experience. You develop more skill, and in that same way, when you're bringing yourself back again and again, back to the senses, to again re-enter into your experience, you could say that those are the best meditations. And as difficult as it can be when the mind is active, Ramana Maharshi, I think, had the best description of the mind when he described the mind as a drunken monkey stung by scorpions. your brain is dramatically changing in the practice, as challenging as it can be. Every time you wake up lost in thought, there's a letting go of that narrative. Every time you come back, you're disidentifying with that thinking mind, and you're coming back and you're resetting. You're reinforcing who you are as that non-judging awareness. And little by little, you begin to build more and more of a capacity to be present. As one of my teachers said, the moment you wake up lost in thought, there are really two options. One is to beat yourself up for forgetting. And the other is to celebrate that you just woke up. And the latter is a lot kinder. But as Tara said this morning, meditation is not just about being with the breath or being with your anchor. It's extraordinarily helpful, but it's not the end result of the practice. Getting concentrated is a very skillful means that will serve you on so many levels. But it's more about cultivating this quality of presence, of non-judging awareness. So when you ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? It's an invitation to come back deeply into the senses. When you ask yourself, can I be more fully present right now? Again, it's an invitation to look even more subtly at what's right here and right now. Gathering your attention is a doorway. And the next question helps you to cultivate your capacity to access non-judging awareness. And that question is, what am I noticing right now? When you are fully present, then you can kind of look around. So back to my photography metaphor. You can sort of break down a second into 24 different frames. But there's also something called time-lapse photography, and maybe you've seen this. When you've got a camera and you set it to maybe go off once a second, or every 2 seconds. And if you've seen time-lapse photography, it's the ones where you see a complete sunrise in maybe 2 minutes. And when you see this, you begin to see all the patterns. You see the clouds forming and moving through. You see the wind as it's moving across a lake. And the interesting thing one of the things I love about time-lapse photography is you get to see so many things happening kind of very, very quickly that are normally very, very slow. The camera is a very good metaphor for our practice. We have the lens that we're looking through, and then there's the chip or the film that's actually recording what's going on. And you can direct that lens in different ways. You can focus it down, you can open it wide, and yet there's something there that is aware, that's noticing and recording what's going on. So as you reflect on your experience today, you've had lots of thoughts. Did anyone have any unpleasant sensations today? Any pleasant sensations today? Yeah. Any neutral experiences, moments of boredom, perhaps? Any strong emotions? I would imagine. One of the things I love, a line from Jack Kornfield, who said once on a retreat, that one of the main advantages of meditating in a large group is if you're having particularly insane thoughts, you can blame them on the person behind you. There have been some times on retreat where I wanted to turn around at the end of the retreat at the person behind me and say, if I was thinking your thoughts, I think you need some help. That might have been mine. So one of my current passions in photography is right up the river from where we live, there are two bald eagles building a nest. And it looks like they're getting ready to lay their eggs in February. And it's just thrilling to paddle up there and to visit them. And and watch them. And it's fascinating because they tend to move to the highest sycamore on the island, and they observe what's going on. And there's something about that analogy of being an eagle at the top of a large sycamore, simply observing all that changes. And you know that they see every detail. Another analogy, kind of from nature, is from Eckhart Tolle, who talks about if you watch a cat watching a mouse hole, there's simply that kind of wide awake presence. We begin to cultivate that and access that capacity as well. You begin to notice what's changing. You begin to notice the patterns of thoughts that come through. You begin to notice and be able to name and identify the weather systems of the mind as they come through. I could easily give a long talk on the weather systems of the mind, but I wanted to just to offer a short reflection on these five particular mind states. I like the analogy of them as weather systems because they kind of form as subtle clouds, and then before you know it, you're completely socked in and you can't see anything. The first of these weather systems falls into the category of aversion. And this is all the different qualities of aversion that show up as anger and judgment and blame and ill will or hatred. It might be something that's stimulated in the present moment, but quite often it can be a memory surfing or a thought of the future that will kind of kick you into this weather system of anger, judgment, blame, ill will. How many of us experience this weather system at some point today? Yeah. It's a form of judgment, a form of kind of pushing away. Kind of the opposite of that is this weather system of wanting, of desire, of craving. And this has qualities, kind of the mental state where you find yourself planning, or you find yourself lost in fantasy, lost in thought, kind of lost into kind of sensual fantasies, fantasizing of what's for dinner, will there be dessert? The next category has to do with the kind of restlessness of mind that shows up when you're caught in worry and anxiety. If you've noticed today, perhaps, that your mind has been processing issues and you feel like you're on a hamster wheel where you're just cycling through the issue without any resolution. Anyone notice that today? Yeah. So that quality of worry, of anxiety, of restlessness, the inability of the mind to settle on one thing. It's a very powerful weather system that comes through. The opposite of that kind of agitation and restlessness is called sloth and torpor, kind of a heaviness, a density, sleepiness. I imagine that's been a strong theme today. And the fifth is a kind of paralysis that shows up in the form of doubt, doubting yourself, doubting your choices, a form of self-criticism. So if you've had any experience today of like, I can't do this, this is too hard, or why did I come here? I could be somewhere else having a great time, but I'm here? Now these five mind states have a quality of good news and bad news. The good news is there are only five. The bad news is they're quite insidious. The good news is that you can recognize them. And simply by recognizing them, you begin to shift your relationship to what's going on. As soon as you recognize anger, you're not quite as identified with the anger. And it allows you to investigate that anger. Inevitably, the more you settle, the more you begin to get more and more rested, the more you can bring yourself more fully present, you will begin to recognize these mind states as they arise. You'll begin to see more clearly into the repetitive thoughts, the repetitive beliefs, all your repetitive reactive patterns. They all start to become more evident the more you ask yourself, what am I noticing right now? You begin to notice what's arising, you begin to notice what's here, and you begin to notice what's falling away. This is really quite a radical practice. One of the realizations of the Buddha when he had his awakening, reportedly, was the recognition that everyone is looking for happiness in exactly the wrong way. We're looking towards sense fulfillment. When you turn your attention to the experience on the inside, from the mind to the body, it's a radical practice. When you ask yourself, how much more fully can I be present right now? Again, a radical practice. When you begin to cultivate non-judging awareness and ask, what am I noticing? What am I aware of right now? Again, it's a radical practice. And part of the question becomes, you become more aware of what's between you and feeling free or feeling happy. You become more aware of discomfort, of unpleasant physical sensations. You become more aware of strong, uncomfortable emotions. You become aware of thought patterns. You also become more aware of kindness and compassion, the moments of stillness. Joseph Goldstein did a long retreat. And from what I understand, at the end, he kind of summarized his learning from that long, intensive retreat. And I believe he said his takeaway was, anything can happen at any time. And that I find to be so interesting. In the midst of your practice, anything can happen at any time. It was reported in group today that someone just noticed a moment of very deep stillness. There can be sensations that arise. There can be undigested emotions that arise. They're all part of the process. But there can also be moments of grace, moments of stillness. Anything can happen at any time. The challenge, which we'll be diving into more in subsequent talks, is as you become aware of unpleasant, as you become aware of what's between you and feeling happy, how do you be with it? And this is really the fourth question you can ask yourself. Can I be with this moment right now? On a recent retreat, there was someone who I knew from the retreat who was a really upbeat person. Someone who always had kind of new plans and new possibilities, kind of bubbly and entertaining, the kind of person you'd think of as kind of the life of the party. You know, life was just a big yes for her. And in her practice, as she began to settle, she started to become aware of kind of a deep sadness inside. And it really troubled her. Because so much of her life was about saying yes and being positive and seeing all kinds of new possibilities. So in our interview, she wanted to explore this a little bit. I'd like to touch on, just the remaining minutes I have, an acronym that is tremendously helpful if you're not familiar with it. That really leads to this question of, can I be with this? And the acronym is RAIN. To recognize what is here. To ask yourself, can I allow it? Can I make space for this? The I, to be intimate, to really investigate what's there. And the N is to nourish it. To nourish it with loving presence, with compassion or kindness. This formula can be tremendously helpful when you encounter physical pain, emotional turbulence, mental agitation. And so we began to explore her experience through this lens of RAIN. And she recognized that there was something under her normal way of being, of her strategy in life, that had a real deep sense of sadness to it. And it was troubling for her. So she could recognize there's something going on. And I find in this practice, when we're really exploring transformation, the analogy I find myself always coming back to from Bill Moyers is this big circle, Joseph Campbell, I'm sorry. Imagine a big circle with a line through it, horizontal line. Above the line is what you're aware of. Below the line is what you're not yet aware of. As you relax, you come back to the body. You relax, you let yourself be fully present. You pay attention to what's there. That noticing of what's there under the surface is part of this process of waking up. And so she recognized that below the line was kind of an abiding sense of sadness. And so I inquired, does it feel okay? Does it feel okay to be with this? And she was open to it. So then we began the I, to be intimate, to investigate it. The primary place of investigation, back to that first question, what are you feeling right now, is to locate that on the inside. And for her, it was a very, very tight clutch through the heart, the throat, the heart, down at the belly. And as she began to describe it, she began to just sense how old that feeling was. And that deep abiding sense of sadness, she couldn't place it, but she knew it went way, way back. And she recognized an early memory that she had with her mother. Her mother was a very upbeat person like her. She was a business person, always doing deals, always networking people, always on to the next thing. And she modeled herself after her mother, a very, very successful person. But she had a memory of a time when her mother was deeply and profoundly sad. Her mother actually had her own depression that she was working with. And the sense of that so frightened her that she realized that her strategy was to always be that positive person. So then the question became, could she be with it? And she actually, as she really began to feel this old, old feeling of sadness, she actually said, how do I make this go away? And of course, that's exactly what we want to do. We want to make it go away. I remember many, many years ago, I did a very intensive seminar. At the end of the seminar, the leader said, here's the final question. Can you tell your mother you love her, knowing that she'll never change? That was a revelation for me. Could I actually accept her as she is? And this becomes the question. When you contact that hurt place inside, if that is part of your experience in this retreat, can you be with it? Is it possible to offer it some empathy or compassion or kindness? And for myself, I'm very much of a fixer. And I found it very, very helpful when I find myself kind of dropping in and contacting something that's between me and feeling free to do a little substitution. And that is, instead of trying to fix it, to have an intention to get familiar with it. And the Buddha said, familiarity leads to wisdom. And so for her, as she explored not fixing it, but just getting familiar with it, she began to report something that she said kind of felt like kindness. And there was a softening that she began to feel. And in that softening, she could begin to feel an internal shift. Not that that went away, never to return. But she was much more aware and had access to kindness and compassion regarding that particular issue. From what I can tell, this is the alchemy of transformation. One is to see clearly, to recognize what is here. The second wing is compassion. However you wire it up, it's your capacity to be with it, to hold it in some kind of loving presence. Recognizing in any moment what is here, inquiring whether you can be with it. And it's very important to note, and we'll reinforce this, that there are times when you can't be with it. You can't allow it or accept it. Either it feels too overwhelming or flooding, or you don't have the concentration or the energy or the capacity to be with it. And it's very, very skillful to let it know you see it. And another time when the conditions are different, you can be with it. But if you do have a sense that something is arising in your experience, strong physical sensation, turbulent emotion, or an agitated mind which has an emotion underneath it, you may find this practice to be very, very helpful. To turn to investigation, to be intimate, and then to inquire, can I be with this? Can I call on a quality of kindness or compassion or empathy, which is quite often the lubrication that allows you not only to be with it, but to let it shift and flow, perhaps to let it go. It's been said that what we're practicing here is a practice of remembering. The breath-based meditation, Anapanasati, the word sati means to remember. So it's about remembering that the foundation of your practice is embodied. When you ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? It's an invitation to move to the experience, the raw data of here and now. Remembering that this is a practice about being fully present. When you can ask yourself, how much more fully can I be here? And to investigate as intimately as you can what is here. Remembering that this is about cultivating a quality of non-judging awareness. And when you ask yourself, what am I aware of right now? You become more aware of what is arising, what's here, what's shifting, and what's changing. And it's about remembering that it's about the presence that allows you to be fully here. When you ask yourself, can I be with this? Or can I let this be? You are invoking a quality of spacious presence. So I'd like to close with a short meditation and a little reading. As much as the mind wanders into the future, reviews the past. You can invite your attention back to the here and now, to the senses. You can ask if it's possible to be more fully present, to be aware of what is here and what it means to be with it. This reading is entitled Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. Let it find you. Namaste.